Okay, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for having me here. I hope that I can bring some practical viewpoints to this conference. My name is Ville Grahn, and I work as a digital media manager in newspaper Keski-Suomalainen, which is the largest newspaper here in central Finland. As digital media manager, I'm the head of our online news and television, and I also work with our digital development. Even if in my current job I deal much with development projects, I have a background in journalism. Before I started as a digital media manager, I worked as a producer in our online news desk. And before that, I was reporter in Keski-Suomalainen Sunday section and national news section. And today I will give you a short introduction to newspapers' challenges in the time of in the digital age, and especially the time of social media. It's obvious that the growth of social media has changed our industry a lot. Social media affects the creating news and consuming them. And digital platforms are challenging the so-called legacy media like Keski-Suomalainen. We have done printed newspaper for over 140 years, so it's hard to change. The change in the newspaper industry has been very powerful in the last decade, and especially in the last couple of years. Transformation from paper to digital is challenging, but it also has lots of opportunities. So I will tell you a little bit about our situation for next 15 minutes or so. We have foreign guests here, so I assume that everybody in this room is not familiar with Keski-Suomalainen. So I will shortly introduce the organization that I represent here. As Heikki said, Keski-Suomalainen is the oldest newspaper in Finnish language that is still published. The newspaper was founded in 1871, and we launched our website in 1996 and were one of the first Finnish newspapers online. In print, we are today the fifth largest newspaper in Finland. In online world, the situation changes from week to week, but last couple of weeks we have been the largest regional newspaper in Finland. We actually broke our all-time record 2 weeks ago. We gathered more than 366,000 people in a week to our website. In print, our newest circulation number is a little bit over 61,000. The circulation means that in print we have almost 150,000 readers daily. If we combine online readers and print readers, we reach almost 260,000 people every week. This means that today Keski-Suomalainen reaches more people than it has ever reached. Okay, now you ask, how can we reach more people online than with print and online combined? The explanation is the statistics method. The print and online combined number is based on survey research, and the online-only number is based on our own statistics. If you ask me, the online statistics are of course more accurate than a survey. Almost all of our readers print are from central Finland region. Our website, of course, gathers visitors from all over the country, but majority of them are also from central Finland. And now I will move on to the topic. This graphic shows how dramatic the change has been and how dramatic it still is. The blue line is our readers in print, and the red line is our online users. The statistics method for measuring the numbers isn't the same, so you can't exactly compare the numbers with each other. But still, this tells something about the dramatic change in our readers' behavior. We started making online content seriously in 2007. By 2011, we had as much online readers as paper readers. Today, we reach online more people than we reach in print. Okay. Reaching people is nice, but how do we pay for the production? Making journalism even for online isn't free. Newspapers have traditionally kept their websites free. They have believed that someday the profits from advertisements will be so high that the production could be profitable. They have also believed that the online version is an advertisement for printed newspaper. We hoped that visiting newspapers' website leads to a print subscription. By 2012, we understood that it will not go that way. We understood that online ad profits will never grow as high that they would be enough to support us. We decided that we have to get also subscription profits from online. The business model is exactly the same that it has been in newspapers for over 100 years. About the half of the profit comes from advertisers and another half from subscribers. Our solution for online subscription was so-called a soft paywall. We launched the paywall in May a year ago. Soft paywall means that a user can read 5 articles in a week for free. After that, we require a subscription. And also, if an article is shared to Facebook or Twitter, it is accessible to users even if they don't have a subscription. We allow this unlimited social media sharing because we don't want to cause a disappointment. If somebody sees an interesting headline from us, for example, in Facebook, the user will not get a good impression of our brand if there is only paywall to see. The main point of the soft paywall is that it combines high user rates and subscription incomes. New York Times was the first newspaper to use this model, and now it's spreading all over the world. For example, Finland's largest newspaper, Helsingin Sanomat, launched their paywall about 1.5 years ago. We were the first regional newspaper in Finland that launched a paywall. But nowadays, almost all major newspapers are developing online subscription models of their own. As you can see, our user rates have grown even faster after launching the paywall, so at least it hasn't scared our users away. And this is even more dramatic change than the growth of online usage. This is the growth of people using mobile devices on our online services. Here on mobile devices, the device mean a smartphone or a tablet. Less than 5 years ago, we had 0.1% of our traffic from mobile devices. Today, more than 30% of our visitors use mobile devices. And as you can see, the share of mobile devices is still growing very fast. The growth is most dramatic in smartphones, but people also bought 700,000 tablet devices in Finland last year, so also they are spreading fast. So, what does this mean for a newspaper? Newspaper isn't anymore something that people read in the morning and then wait for the next morning. Our content is used all the time and everywhere. For example, we don't have deadlines for news stories anymore. If something interesting happens in central Finland, we are late if we don't tell something about it in a few minutes. And there is a huge demand for local news. If there is a breaking news story in our area, people are used to come to our site to see what happens. For example, we had a stabbing in Jyväskylä library about a year ago. Within 1 hour, we had more than 20,000 people that had read that single story. In a day, the story had something like 50,000 readers. So, that is a good sign for us. At least there is a need for local news. And the local news is practically our only strength in internet, where our competitors are everyone from CNN to BBC to Helsingin Sanomat. Of course, selling digital services isn't easy, even with the paywall. Still, we have managed somehow. These are statistics of our digital subscribers. These numbers mean people that are paying us for using our online products. In 2012, we have had a couple of hundred digital subscribers. And in last May, when we launched the paywall, we got about 2,000. Nowadays, the number of our digital subscribers is more than 10,000. So the growth has been more than 400% in a year. The most important thing to us, it seems that people's attitudes towards paying online content is about to change. A couple of years ago, everybody thought that everything on the internet should be free. They were downloading music and movies illegally, and paying for an e-book sounded like a joke. Nowadays, people are more and more used to pay for online content. We have, for example, Spotify for music and Netflix for TV shows and movies and so on. For example, I calculated that this year I will use about 700 euros for digital content. And this is my own money, not anything that is paid my employer. So maybe there is a chance for journalistic content too. Okay, how does social media affect the newspaper business? As I said earlier, it's changing both the way we create journalism and the way people consume journalism. These are screenshots from Keski-Suomalainen's Facebook page and from my own Twitter profile. As you can see, we can reach huge amount of people in Facebook. We have more than 17,000 people that like us, and in a typical week, our posts reach more than 100,000 people. Actually, nowadays, the reach number is typically several hundreds of thousands. Typically, about 25% of traffic to our website is generated by social media. I know that social media experts look down on everyone who talks about social media, but means only Facebook. And yes, I know that there is Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest and so on, but in generating traffic, Facebook is by far the largest. I said that we got about 25% of our traffic from social media. When we get 100,000 visits from Facebook, at the same time we get like 3,000 visits from Twitter. That tells something about the scale of those social media forums from our viewpoint. So our point of view, the Facebook is more than 30 times larger than Twitter, which is the second largest social media to create traffic. Nowadays, it is so that a news story doesn't exist if people are not able to share it. Usually, sharing tells us something about the quality of the story. If it's widely shared, maybe it's so good that people have wanted to share it. Okay, of course, people are sometimes sharing bad stories as a joke, but mostly the amount of Facebook shares is good measurement for succeeding. I said that Twitter doesn't generate too much traffic for us, so it's not boosting our ad revenues. Still, I think that Twitter is as important tool when working as a journalist as Facebook. For example, I myself have more than 2,500 Twitter followers. Many of them are journalists, researchers, and so on. If I need to ask something, it's likely that I'll get an answer. I also have get several scoops by noticing interesting information from my Twitter feed. I have only had to verify the facts. And also in Facebook, there's interaction with readers. For example, we had a bad thunderstorms in central Finland a couple of days ago. We asked our followers for information. We asked where they can see lightning, and we also asked them for photos. Within an hour, we got tens of observations and six good quality photos from all around central Finland. That was something that would have been very hard to us to observe as widely as our followers can. I also believe that interacting with our reporters deepens a reader's relationship to our newspaper. The only problem is that being interactive takes time. It would be great if you could take part to all conversations that are going on or on our Facebook page or on our own discussion board. That's something that seems to be impossible for us, so normally we are answering it only if somebody asks something straight from us. I have told you about the promising steps in our transformation to digital. The big question is, if we are doing so great, why not go all digital? When creating online content, there are no costs for printing and delivery. And here's the answer. The left bar is our digital subscribers, and the right bar is our circulation in print. Even if the amount of digital subscribers have grown fast, we do still have lots and lots of people that are used to read their newspapers from paper. Also, the great majority from advertising money is still coming from the print, even if digital sales are growing fast. So, our major challenge is that we have to drive with two cars. We have to print the newspaper on the paper and deliver them to customers, which is very expensive. At the same time, we should have resources for developing our online services so they could replace the printed version someday. And at the same time, the technology is developing so fast that we have to run all the time. The iPad has been the Finnish market for 3.5 years, and yet it has totally changed the industry. Next, I assume that we have to start thinking about Keskisuomalainen for Google Glass, which is a way to deliver information to eyeglasses. And that's hard because our business is in creating content, not in developing technology. In conclusion, this is a slide that I like to show everywhere. Nowadays, newspaper is not just printed paper. The newspaper is about content, and it's not relevant which way we distribute the content. For example, we started our online television last September and now are creating video content every day. So it's not necessary that a newspaper should be about text and pictures anymore. Also, it doesn't matter if somebody is reading from our stories from a pile of paper or from his Facebook feed. The important thing is that our content is so good that it's worth to read. The topic of my presentation was about the future of regional newspapers. So, I ask if there is a future. I certainly believe that there is if people are interested in what's happening near them. Technologies may change, but if your content is good enough, you have keys to success. Okay, that was it. Thank you.
Comments.
Should I pass the microphone to you?
Yeah.
Do you want to?
Yeah. Come on. Can't even get the microphone yet. So. Okay, let's wait with that for a little while. First, I'd like to thank you, Ville, for your presentation. It was most interesting, and I think, like you said, it's the practical. Now it's the practical side of it. As Tom Mooring told us, the Finnish people and the Swedish people are among the most newspaper-reading people have been historically during times. And also we spend a lot of time consuming media. What he didn't say is that we also top the record when it comes to coffee drinking. And somehow I think it goes together. At least it used to, I don't know. Okay, I think it's time for a commercial break. Could you put it on it and then I don't know.
I've had my ups and downs. My fair share of bumpy roads and heavy winds.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
That's what made me what I am today. Now I stand here before you. What you see is a body crafted to perfection. A pair of legs engineered to defy the laws of physics. And a mindset to master the most epic of splits.
Oh well, let's quit there, unless he will split. Anyway, no, he doesn't. I guess some of you have seen it. This is supposed to be the most world-spread commercial. And it was made by a Swedish commercial bureau, and of course it's, you know, they want to sell Swedish trucks. I don't think any of us will run and buy the trucks, but it's. I see it as, I was thinking about it when listening to everybody this morning and until now, about how this could illustrate the media situation. Let's say that one truck is could be the media industry or the business, or the other one could be journalism, education. Until a few years ago, we were sort of running parallel roads. But maybe they are dividing, and let's not hope they are dividing too much. But it could also serve as a metaphor for... let's say information gap between younger and older adults. We have seen here that the younger adult, they tend to not read the newspaper, not taking parts of the news shows in the public service media. And so there will be a gap, but how do we tighten it? Enough of that, back to the key questions of your presentation, Ville. Are there people willing to pay? You had some quite encouraging statistics there, but if you divide it into different ages, is it the young people paying or is it the older one?
No. Actually, our users on our website, they are using free, are quite old. Okay, 50 years is maybe not old, but middle-aged people more than we are not able to reach very young people even online.
Hmm.
That's a big problem.
Could be a problem if they take that behavior in the middle age and further. Also, I was thinking about what is quality in journalism, as we all are, as at least when we educate young students to be good journalists. I think most of us, at least the ones of us who are, let's say, 50 plus, think that, you know, we have very firm, opinion about what good journalism is. But maybe we should, in a bit, redefine it in the digital age. Getting the news fast, that is one quality, really fast. I don't mean within the hour, but as you said, within 5 minutes, they expect it, if something happens, they expect to be able to read about it or to see it in pictures. That is one quality we maybe have underestimated. In Sweden, some regional newspapers, not all of them, but a lot of them, are also on the same track as you are. And there is a big company called Mittmedia who owns 19 dailies, smaller dailies, 9 news sites, 24 apps and mobile sites, 10 radio stations. And they have around 1,000 people employed. They started to educate their staff with the motto, digital first. Not very original these days, but anyway. So 200 key persons got a crash course to begin with, to develop their skills. And after that, that was 2012, I think. And after that, all of the editorial staff will get one too. So they will be able to publish themselves not only in printing, but on all platforms. So I wonder how, and of course, you do have the staff you have. You can't, you know, you don't have the money to employ new, younger journalists. So how do you go about learning the old dogs to sit? Or run, maybe?
I think that it's not about the age of the journalist, it's about the attitude. We have for example, one reporter that is specialized on car. Oh, sorry. One reporter that is specialized on cars, and he's more than 50 years old. And when it comes to online world, he's like he's at home. He has like a fish in the water, so to say, and he's a guy that doesn't have anything online background. He's just a paper guy that has just got the clue.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we have lots and lots of people that are very used to creating printed content and aren't too eager to learn more. But nowadays, the situation is that if you want to be a journalist for the next 10 years, you have to learn. You don't really have an option. If you haven't some very special skill, for example, narrative, creating narrative stories, or you have a very great brand as a journalist, but it's not mandatory anymore. But how do we do it? We try to encourage people to just try. It's
most important that you just do something. For example, we started actually a couple of weeks ago, we started to make more videos than we have used to be, and our print journalists are doing those videos along with their print job, and our photographers are photographing the videos with their SLR cameras. So we just start the project by saying that this is not anything too hard, just try. We don't blame you if you fail, just try, you will learn. And everything has gone very smoothly.
Great. But in, I was going to say too, they started this massive skill development program after seeing that in 2 years, 38% of their subscribers under the age of 40 disappeared. 2 years, 38%. And the circulation of the paper had fallen with 28% during a decade. Sounds like a long time, but it, you know, it's quite a fall. And so I asked myself, as an education department in journalism, could we have been more proactive in this field? I mean, to develop the skills, giving courses or whatever, in-house courses. That's more of a rhetorical question. We haven't been, as far as my own department goes. We have not been first on the ball, and we're not second either. And then, when it comes to what we have been talking about today, about being more digital or using the social media, of course, the question is: Do we, to the right extent, meet the needs or the demands of the profession, the new demands? And they're not all that new. We have been, knowing this for a while, but somehow it feels like we haven't taken it in. One question is, do we dare, or what are we waiting for? Do you have an answer? Anybody else? That's that. And maybe we should let him stand up again, or what? Do you actually know that 1 week after this was released, the Louvre phoned the company and wanted to show it in the museum? That's quite something. You can see it here. So thank you.
Show that video.
You want to see what happens?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
So, good afternoon for my part as well. Nice to be here. Ville ended his presentation asking why not go only digital, and now I'm telling why to do that. We are a digital-only publication. My name is Reetta Nousiainen, and I'm teaching journalism in Haaga-Helia University of Applied Sciences. And I'm co-founder of Longplay Media and also CEO of the company now. And this is very practical angle for social media and media industry changes. And I basically want to tell one case which is long play, and how we have created something new for the field in Finland. So what is long play? Slow journalism was mentioned already in the morning here. Long play is slow journalism. It's you might know our like the other actors of the field, international, like Atavis or Byliner. We were influenced by these publications when we were thinking of what to do, what we need to do. So slow journalism basically is looking back old news and seeing if there is something that haven't been told, looking for stories behind the news. We are focusing on investigative journalism, but we want to do it in narrative form. So the business idea of long play is pretty much the same as the Atavist has. We are publishing one long form story in a month, and we sell them as singles. We started, we launched our service in January 13, so we have been doing this a little bit more than a year now. Also, it was earlier mentioned that traditional media has been very defensive now that we are facing all the challenges that media is evolving. We wanted to do something different. We wanted to see if there are some things that we actually can do, except for just whining in the parties, how media is getting superficial. So we wanted to start a new publication, and there are some good things in this new digital era as well. And one of the things is that you don't need to own a printing machine to start something new. You don't need to have that much money. We started out with 500 euros. And we are 8 journalists, 8 freelancers, and we basically just wanted to do something different. There was no motivation of any other than just wanting to try something new. We knew that we are going to work for pro bono for a long time. We didn't know if we can ever pay anything for ourselves. It was a hobby. It was an experiment. And at the beginning, we had absolutely no idea what we were doing, and we've been learning slowly. When it comes to social media, it has been crucial for long play from the very beginning. We launched in January 13, and we didn't have any marketing budget, of course. We didn't have any budget whatsoever. But we had Facebook account, and we had Twitter account, and we got very quickly thousands of people following us on Facebook and on Twitter. So this was the starting point. But of course it doesn't come that easily without having good content, quality content. And the thing that we had already, because you know, Finnish media landscape has been very stable for a long, long time. So there are not that many, actually I don't know if there are any other journalistic startups as we are. So when we were first launched our service, it got a great deal of attention, and people were really interested on our service. So that's why media was writing about us, we got free publicity, and therefore people started to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our first story was okay, but our second story, which was about Prime Minister role in university funding, it's probably the all-time best-selling ebook in Finland. There are not good statistics about this, but it's very likely that it is. Ebook market in Finland is very small. It's only 1% of the whole big market. But yeah. Then later on, we won innovation contest of Helsinki's Nomad Foundation, which has been already mentioned earlier here as a founder. And we won €250,000, and this happened last November. So now we do have money, and everything changed ever since. When we first, I remember when we were waiting for the result of the contest, I didn't know whether I was hoping to get the money or hoping that we don't get the money, because it was obvious that all that we had done before, it was really like pro bono. It was just passion. It was hobby. But eventually, we were all aware that if we get this money, everything will change. First time we really have pressure to do something. Up until that point, we were really free from any pressure. But now we should do something, get something done. Anyhow, we have published 16 singles within these 16 months that we've been working. And we have helped many Finns to buy their first e-book. And one thing that is important for our service is that we were able to launch our own publishing platform in January this year. Up until that, we were selling our singles by different e-book stores that were like Apple and some Finnish e-book stores. And it was really complicated because people who wanted to read our articles were actually not our clients, but they were the clients of the bookstore, so we didn't really reach them as we want to. And now that we got the money, we have plans for the future, and very ambitious plans. We are actually building franchise model for investigative journalism and narrative journalism. Something that we are doing here, we would like to have people to do in other countries as well. We are looking for good freelancers just now in other countries, in European countries, to work with us. So you people, you know, the best writers, since you are teaching them, let them know about us. We help them to start their own LBA branch in other countries by offering our platform and giving any kind of advice that we have learned during these years that we've been working. This has been very, very difficult for us. Since when we started, we are 8 journalists. We don't have any background in business. We don't have any background in entrepreneurial thinking or anything. And now we have a new profession, being an entrepreneur. It is very, very different from what we thought that this work would be when we first started. We just wanted to write good stories. That was the main idea. Now we are thinking of business, and it is a big, big change in thinking. We have learned a lot about e-publishing business, and it is very complicated. As we started, we were thinking like we started to talk about the new publication in January 12, and we thought that maybe, you know, during the springtime at some point we will just publish something and start new application. Slowly we realized that it's not that easy at all, and we need to look for different partners, because we didn't have any money to build our own platform. We needed to sell our stories somewhere. We didn't know anything of that. We have a whole new language which is called startup. We don't know anything about, we didn't know anything about startup business, and now we are playing that in that field as well. The The most difficult thing to admit is that we actually didn't know at all what people want to read online. We thought that we were professionals in that field. We thought that we are journalists who can somehow evaluate the value of stories, or you know, investigate pieces or whatever. It is very, very difficult. You never know how much one story will sell. But little by little, we will learn more. But it's very unpredictable. So what we still need to learn is one basic thing is that we need help. We can't do everything by ourselves. We need help in marketing. We need help in just business-wise. And we have looked for help, but it's possible that we need new members for our team who can really do those things that we can't. Also, we still need to learn how to be a publisher. We still think as journalists. We don't think as being publishers. We need to consider ourselves more like being in a book business than in journalism. We are only publishing 12 stories in a year. There has to be the stories has to build the 12 stories has to have different angles. They have to have different topics. You can't just think as journalist that you want to write about this topic. You have to think whether there has been too many similar stories within the same year, as I think we last year did. So this is something that I was thinking earlier when we were talking about social media. We are really we have created something new in Finland, and we are really happy that we were ones to do it. But we are fully aware that we need to do much more. Publishing one story in a month is not a business model that is going to survive in this world. We need much more. And what we have been doing lately a lot is thinking about totally new forms of journalism. I'm not even talking about text anymore. We have already organized special events for our readers. We had one event that we called Live Magazine Show, which was in National Theatre in Finland, and a club there. And we basically had a live magazine there. And it was an experiment, and it turned out that people were really interested in this kind of events. Not all people were able to get in there. So now we are thinking of maybe broadening our field towards this kind of direction. And now we are just planning a series of events that will take place for next spring, year 15. It's called Space and Sex. And we are doing that with cooperation of a young photographers group called 11 Collective. And Science Center Heureka. And the idea is to just rethink what journalism is, whether journalism could be some performance, whether it could be theater, whether it could be series of, well, photographers, whatever it could be. This is something that we are trying to find now. Also, we think that we still pretty much work for pro bono. We now have two people that are getting paid. I'm not either of them. But all of us, now we are 10 altogether, are working for Long Play, and it has been a great fun. Also, we think that it has benefited the whole journalistic field in Finland. Not only like creating new forms of journalism, but just showing that it really is possible to do things when you want to do things. You don't need money. You don't have that many obstacles as you used to have 30 years ago. I mean, 30 years ago, this wouldn't have been possible to do. And as teacher, I think this is the most important message for my students. Also, not the fact that I'm well, also the thing that I'm doing and I'm writing, but even more so the fact that we started out from nothing and we have been able to do this. Nobody knows for how long. We have funding for 2 years now. It could be that the long play is over after that. Now it seems that it might continue even longer, but we'll see. Thank you.
Rita, would you mind standing up and sing?
Yep.
That was such an interesting presentation that what I'd like to do is a Q&A, if that's okay.
Okay, that's okay.
And then you can have a chance too, but I think there were so many interesting points in that presentation that I would love to hear a little more. So this is not a clearly well thought out series of questions, so we'll just start. But to begin at the end, when you talk about it's pro bono, some people would say that it's a hobby, it's not to be taken seriously. And yet you talk about it rethinking journalism. So how would you respond to people that say, well, pro bono, what can you expect? It's not to be taken seriously. You're doing it as a hobby.
I would say that read our stories and then evaluate what we're doing. I mean, the thing that we are doing, one thing that I need to mention, we are paying for our writers and editors and illustrators. All those are getting paid, and they're fairly paid. What is pro bono work is all the other. It's like this kind of thing that we're doing here, and it's like thinking and gathering together, like spending time, having meetings. The kind of thing that usually you do in the office, but not writing part, but all the other part. So this part is pro bono, but for writers we do pay, and we pay fairly.
Okay. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
And just one comment about that, I would say, you know, in looking at what the millennial generation, whatever you call the next generation coming up, the studies about work show that having fun and feeling like you're doing something important is a huge motivator. So you tapped into that, I think, in this project in a way that really is important to pay attention to. So the next question I would ask then is, knowing that you pay your writers, now we in good conscience can send our students to you.
Yes.
What would you look for? What do you think a well-trained student who wanted to do what you're doing, what aspects or what characteristics do they most need?
They must be very hardworking. This is really demanding form of journalism. They need to be very ambitious, and they need to be willing to cooperate. Because we have had several stories, more than one, that were to be published, but because of different difficulties with writers and editors, they never were published. So our pieces are about 60,000 characters long, so they're not books, but they are much longer than any other journalistic texts. So it is difficult to understand how much work it demands, even for experienced journalists. But I think young journalists do have good chance to learn new ways of thinking journalism, so that's why I think it might be even easier for them. and they are probably also more willing to work with editors and rethink their own job.
In conversations like this in the United States, one of the questions that comes up is, should we be teaching more business skills? Some of the challenges that you talked about with marketing and business, understanding revenue models. Do you see any need for journalism students to have that kind of training?
Well, definitely there is a need for that kind of training, yes. But also I think if you're a journalist, you are, even in journalistic training, you are taught to ask and taught to investigate. And it's not like rocket science, after all. It's coming up with business models and basically playing with numbers. It's not something that you don't learn by doing. You can learn it by doing. But in this time, I think it is crucial for future journalists to understand these things when they graduate.
One of the things you said that I thought was interesting was, coming into this project as a journalist, you felt you knew what people were interested in reading. And now through this, you have a different perspective on what people want to read. So two questions from this. One, what have you learned? And two, do you feel in any way you've lost your autonomy by being more responsive to the audience?
First question is much easier. people want to read even longer and even more investigative pieces. This is the only message we get from our readers. They want more in-depth investigations. They want longer pieces. So it's not like people don't have time to read. They do have time to read. Thing is, writing those articles is very, well, it takes time, and we still are learning in many ways. Are we losing our autonomy? We do understand that if none of our pieces sells nothing, we're done. But we also understand that we don't need that many bestsellers. That we're doing fine. We're a very, very small organization. We don't have we don't need to make that much profit. So and now we have time. We have 2 years time. So no, in that sense, no, not right now. But eventually, of course, we must make profit if we want to continue, and we need to sell pieces. That's a thing.
I assume then that the events that you're sponsoring are partly an effort to raise money. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. So I taught a journalism class this semester. The students were given the assignment to cover the entrepreneurial startups in our city. And in the conversations, the startup people said, we don't need another website. We don't need more stories. We need to meet people at the university. We don't feel connected. So the students ended up sponsoring an event that brought the university and the journalists and students from all over the university together. And afterwards we had a debate, is this journalism? So I wondered, as you think about the events that you're sponsoring, how do you answer that question?
It's always the question. I've been doing documentary theater as well, and it's always the question whether it's journalism or not. I don't know. I don't want to define. I think it must justify itself within journalism. And if it does it, then it is. If it doesn't, then it isn't. Not all documentary theater is journalism, and not all the events that are based on journalistic values are journalism. But what we are doing, we are now rethinking of journalism. We want to think that if there is some other ways to look, not even audiences, but kind of society that would build journalism with themselves and Yeah, well, this is what we are thinking now. We're talking about social media 2.0, like just being social in real life.
The Center for Investigative Reporting in Berkeley did a project, I think it was last year, on a housing project in a low-income neighborhood. And they felt that they were just doing journalism about people rather than with the people that the story affected. Mm-hmm. They ended up working with two poets in the community who set the story into a poem that they produced as a play. And they put that on for the people that were affected by the story. Had a wonderful response. And so I turn to that as an example of what looks like journalism in a different form. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This is something that we are thinking of now for Heureka, the Science Center. We will have a huge event there in next spring sometime. And now we're just trying to look for different people to work with us. There are already writers, like fiction writers, and there are actors, and there are us journalists, and let's see what we can do together. And scientists, of course, as well.
It's hard to predict the future, but 2 years from now your funding runs out. What do you think will happen? What do you want in your imagination? What would you like to see?
It's dangerous to wish things. You might even get those then. I think we will be around. Longplay will be around. I don't know how many people will be working there. If everything goes as we wish, as we plan, I think we will have 3 or 4 people working for Longplay, and we others will be submitting stories and doing development work as we have been doing now. We will never be big. We don't even want to be big in that sense. But I think there is some corner for us in the market where we can find our readers. We won't ever have as many readers as your website, and we don't even need that many because our business model is totally different, and the structure is very light. So we are able to continue with much less money. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Just a small remark that seems to be what we are in a big educational challenges in terms of journalism education. Who actually are we educating journalists in the traditional view, or are we educating people who are doing something else than a journalist at the moment are doing? It's a big challenge. For instance, here at Universitas Kyla, we have been thinking about how do we update our education system. What should be added and what should be left out? I think these are future questions for every one of us. But okay, now the platform is open for questions to Ville and Greta. And please go ahead.
Thank you. Nita Wiggins from ESJ in Paris. I wonder, how do you determine the types of stories to do, and how much consideration is given to the diaspora instead of focusing on people within your country's borders? You have people around the world who might also have an interest. For Ville.
Sorry, can you repeat the question? I didn't actually get it.
The question has to do with how do you determine stories and the story angles, and how much consideration is given to the diaspora, this people outside of the borders, instead of just local stories for people in the country?
Well, we would like to be a full-service newspaper. We have always used to be, so we cover also foreign news, and we cover
national news and so on. But as I said, our strength in online world is local news. So this is something that we can do best. There is no point that in giving mediocre service for foreign people. Of course, if there are foreign people or Finnish people living abroad, because we are writing in Finnish language, that are interested in things that happens in central Finland. So of course we are serving them, but when the question was how much attention is paid to those kind of readers, I would say not at all. We are concentrating on people in our circulation area here in central Finland. And the first part of the question was how deeply is those viewpoints of the stories concentrated. Of course we try to get the best angle for every story that is possible, but of course the nature of reporting online nowadays is very fast, so in my opinion actually we do too much news stories in the standard way. We don't have time to as much time as I would like to we have to thinking about angles, for example.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to thank our colleague from Paris for pointing attention to this issue, which in Finland is scandalously badly treated. We have about 3-4% of immigrated population in Finland. Our diasporas are quite small, the biggest one being Russian, next biggest one being Estonian, then from countries from where we take refugees. We are by far the least generous in all Nordic countries, and our journalism education system has not taken care of teaching journalists in this field. This is an often discussed matter that nobody has done anything to, and also our media, including our public service company, has only decreased its interest in this field, where everywhere else this is a question of increased interest. So thank you for the question, and shame on us.
Yeah. Maybe I can ask a question from Ville about this user-generated content, website discussions. You have a post-moderation mostly in your paper. What kind of extra workload does this increase in your own work?
This was something that we discussed over the lunch with Heikki. So yes, we do have a discussion board in Keski-Suomalainen's website, and it gets hundreds messages every day. And we have, as Heikki said, a post-moderation system, and we don't have actually separate people for the moderation. So the moderating the conversation is our online desk is responsible of that too. At the same time, when they are creating news stories and administrating the site technically and so on. So, well, what would I say? It takes like an 1 hour each day for one reporter to moderate those conversations, and the quality of the moderation is not as good as it should be. We to be honest, we publish every kind of trash on our discussion board. So, this is something that I don't have a very good solution to, because we don't have money. We really don't have possibility to hire an editor to just for our discussion board and our social media pages, which would be nice to have, because not only for moderation purposes, but also for interaction with the readers. So, for example, our discussion board would be so much better if we have a moderator that not only deletes the inappropriate messages, but also would take part in the conversation and so on. It would be nice, but in current economical situation, it's really not possible.
Reta, I would ask you to give some more details. I think people would be interested to know more about how you sell your stories, since you sell some of them to some other media that publishes the story, and also some direct to readers. But I think some more details might be interesting.
So we sell our stories directly to the readers only. Now we have our own platform, which we use, but we also still sell our stories in, for example, iBook store and some other e-book stores, but only to the readers. No, not to the other media. We are we do have negotiations with some well-established media houses to start up some kind of cooperation, but just now we don't have anything like this, but it's very probable that in the future we will have something like this.
One question from me again. Do we have to actually be very much afraid of social media? I mean that there are people in the media industry, audience may be disappearing from our portals. They go into social media. Is the social media a threat, or is some kind of opportunity in terms of journalism?
Well, I know that in our business there is lots and lots of people that think that social media is a threat. So the thinking is so straightforward that people are not using Keskisuomalainen's printed version anymore, and they are going to Facebook, and the advertisers will follow them. Of course, there is something true when it comes to advertising market. Yes, that's true. Facebook and Google are taking our money away, but I don't see the social media as a threat at all, because it's useful tool. It's the way to deepen our reader relationship, and mostly when people are discussing in social media, for example in Facebook, they are discussing about something that traditional media has brought to daylight. Of course, they are telling about borns of their babies and new dogs, but also the main discussion topics are something that the traditional media has created.
As I told, for us, Longplay, social media was crucial when we were launching our service. Otherwise, nobody would have known about us anything. But now we have reached our limits somehow there. So I think what we have to do and what we are doing right now, we are actually investigating and trying to study social media more carefully to be able to have certain tone of speaking for our readers. Now it has been kind of like someone who has time has been doing some notes on Facebook and on Twitter, but maybe just sharing links is not enough. We have to have like our own voice, and now we are thinking of what would be our voice, how could we develop it, and how would people be more interested in hearing what Longplay has to say. But this is something that we don't know how to do yet. We are just studying it now.
Any more questions? Or shall I leave? Oh, one.
Okay. Another remark. When I was listening to what we were discussing since this morning.
Sorry. We were talking about, are we losing autonomy because of social media? And I really wish very much that we stop talking about all this and concentrate on journalism and understand that these social media are tools to get the message through in a market that has completely changed. It's not a seller's market anymore. The people are not waiting for our products. We have to make sure that they want our products and that our products get to these people. And I think we should understand better what journalism is. We talked about, is social media journalism? I think this is the wrong question. Journalism is a role within the society, and journalism can do things, and we can use tools for that. And social media is just one tool. And I really wish that we could overpass these discussions and make it a bit more, useful, because this is a very difficult discussion and it does not bring us any further.
Yeah, just say, I totally agree with you. I think social media is a very important tool, but I think we are not using it. There are much more possibilities to use it than just share links to our stories. There is much more to do with social media, and this is just step one, and we have to investigate how to use social media better than we are doing it now.